Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here's your host, Joe Kuzma and Zach Meckler.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name's Joe Kuzma, and joining me today, my brother from another mother, my other brother from another mother, something or other, the professor, the coach, the guru, the wizard. Ooh, I kind of like that one, the wizard, Zach Meckler. Zach, what's going on?
Not too much. Can't complain. You know, another day. Draft's behind us, so I can start looking forward to, you know, April of 2022 when my life will have meaning again. So just trying to get to that point at this point.
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear, and we got some things to talk about today, but mostly surrounding some draft aftermath here. But we didn't get to talk to you at all. You were out doing the wedding thing, or so you claim. You know,
I was. I have pictures to prove it. If you would like me to,
maybe we don't want those to surface. Depending on
They're dapper. I look dapper. The groomsmen all look dapper. You know. The grooms and brides all look good. You know, it was a double wedding, actually, fun fact.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah,
wow.
It was intense. It was intense, but it was good. It was good.
Let me ask you this. I was involved, I don't think it's been 5 years yet. One of my best friends growing up finally got married, finally got hitched, and that's the last wedding I was involved with. And a little different than, you know what, 11 years for me, actually, this upcoming weekend. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, we've been together like 18 or 19 or something crazy. And it's just like, man, and then I'm got one foot in the grave almost. Although I shouldn't say that with people like, you know, Brian around. But we wore, anyways, a little bit of light blue, like, you know, the vest, the tie, and then Pumas, light blue. Ooh. Canvas Pumas, which, ooh. Yeah. Any sneakers or anything like that, or just the fancy dress shoes? Anything contemporary?
Just dress shoes. We didn't actually rock the suit coats. It was, you know, white shirts, bow tie, suspenders. You know, like these gray pants and black dress shoes. So
it was stylish. Classic.
Yeah, it looked good.
Stylish. I had like good. The lamest bachelor party ever that involved. I don't smoke, but we stopped at a convenience store. We were almost out of gas. We were driving around trying to hit up some gentlemen's clubs and stuff and places. And it was just a monumental failure on our part on the whole groom side of the thing here. And it was funny because a buddy went and bought me some like black and I think cherry black and mild. And it was just, or maybe, and maybe, you know, the little cigars or whatever it was. And then we were trying to figure out how to light it. In this day and age, you know, some of our older fans will remember there were cigarette lighters built into the car, and you could burn yourself with them, or, you know, burn the children if they're too loud or whatever. Yeah, I don't have burn marks on me. I'm good. It was in a movie. Okay, so we didn't have a way to light these things, so I never did end up smoking them anyway. So it was just kind of just one failure after another. It was funny, lame stuff. It made for good stories, but I didn't get to talk to you because of the wedding stuff. That was the whole point. We get off into the banter. We got to have the introductory banter. It's just the way it has to be, man. So I guess I'll give you two shots at this then. Your favorite pick and your least favorite pick. So let's start with the favorite pick of the draft. Are you allowed to pick Najee Harris, since that was our consensus pick?
Najee Harris would be the easy pick. I'm not going to pick him, though, because I feel like that's just the cop-out. I'm like, oh, yeah, he's the best player in the draft. Well, he went in the first round. There's a reason this other seven guys or eight guys didn't. Or eight guys. They had a nine-person class, yeah, with that trade-up. You know, selfishly, I'm going to go with Kendrick Green.
Shocker.
Shocker. The O-line guy picks the offensive lineman. It was a combination between him and Dan Moore. I was going to be hesitant to pick Dan Moore because I sometimes see somewhere between a higher upside version of Takuma Okorafor as the ceiling and a floor of Gerald Hawkins. And I think, you know, that will probably scare some fans off. So I don't want to go with that route. I do think Kendrick Green's more the sure thing. And I just, you know, I love offensive linemen that are athletic, that could reach and, you know, zone block as well as he does. I don't care about the height. I know people are going to harp on the height. Center is the one position along that offensive line. He has incredible length for the position, which was always what made Marquise Pouncey such a special prospect, was his length. And Kendrick Green is right up there in length. He's a far better athlete than Marquise Pouncey was. And we always, applauded Marquise Pouncey for his athleticism at the center position. Now you have an opportunity to upgrade that. He's 6'1 and 7/8 or whatever. Call it 6'2. Let's not act like he's a 5'7 NFL center. You know, he's a fine size. He'll get the job done. I think he'll probably end up winning the job. I'd be surprised if he didn't. It's going to really come down to how well he acclimates with it and what the rapport is with Ben, because Ben, I think, is going to have more of a say in there. You know, Ben's been playing with the same center now for the last decade, and he's in his last hurrah. Who's he going to feel more comfortable with? Who are guys like Dotson and, you know, DeCastro going to feel more comfortable with? I think it's Green, but I like him a lot. He's my favorite pick. And if you're going to go with the least favorite pick, I don't criticize them because they were high on him. I still struggle to make sense with the Isaiah Loudermilk pick. I might have been too harsh on him in the back channels. I get what they're going for. They were apparently high on him. I don't agree with the notion that he would have been an undrafted free agent, because you never have an idea. They traded up for him and gave up a future fourth round pick for next year, which almost guarantees in my mind that he's going to be on the roster. You're not going to trade up for a dude for him not to be on the roster. So clearly they feel very good about his talent and his abilities. He's a nice frame, nice long body, kind of stiff, kind of upright. I don't see him ever being a dude that comes in here and, you know, ends up being the heir apparent to Cam Hayward or Stephon Tuitt down the road. But if he becomes a developmental rotational piece that gives them some flexibility, especially with Tyson Alualu getting up there in age. Cam Hayward is getting older, even though I still think he's a very effective All-Pro caliber offensive or defensive lineman. You know, maybe he gives you that point. I just don't see a dude that's ever going to be a good starting player. Like, I think Quincy Roche has a much better opportunity of being a starting. If you're looking at those day three picks, I think he probably is the best bet of any of those dudes to be a starter at some point in his career, or at least be a very solid contributor. I almost made him my favorite pick. I think in terms of value, he's easily the Steelers' best value pick of the draft, not even close. I had him so high on my board compared to where he ended up going. I think most people probably felt the same way. I think people got scared off by his stiffness. But I would say, long story short, Kendrick Green's probably my favorite pick. The Loudermilk pick is probably going to be my least favorite pick. And it's no knock on him. I didn't see the need on defensive line. They might know something that we don't. We're not in those meetings. I just thought that I really didn't think they were going to draft the defensive lineman this draft. I thought they were pretty much set there. And then to trade up for one, especially one of him, who I didn't even have him in my top 350. But again, what do I know? Like, I'm not going to sit there and say I know more than the Steelers. He wasn't even on my radar.
Your opinion's still the same, you know.
He wasn't on my radar, you know. Like, so I was surprised, but. Man, I'm not going to trash him. I hope for the best, and I hope that he turns in and proves me wrong. I'd be stunned if he ever became anything more than a scratch, or kind of at the end of the depth chart, you know, back five roster player.
Well, I was thinking all of these guys look like clones of existing players who had been on the roster, like Green looks
uncanny.
Like Pouncey, and Loudermilk looks like Hayward, and even Pat Freiermuth, the tight end, kind of has some resemblance maybe to Heath. Are they going to say Pat, maybe? Muth, something's coming out of there. It just, I don't know. Eric Ebron just hasn't – well, he's got to catch the ball. That's one thing. And then maybe and have fans in the stands, and then maybe we'll have something for him too. So maybe. Like E and whatever. I've never called him Double E. In fact, my best man at my wedding, that was his nickname, Double E.
Double E.
He won't be listening. He's a ginormous Cleveland Browns fan. And
that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I know. But you know what? He's also he's a football guy, kind of like yourself. I mean, he has even done stats for, like, JV high school football games. Like, he's totally – he went to the World Series of Football in Canton many years ago. It was, like, Sweden and Japan, and U.S. and Canada were in the final, as it was, like, no surprise. And I don't even know who plays in these games, but he went. He got, like, a ticket. It was, like, a pass for, like, 2 days, the whole thing. And then Canada got, like, blown out, like, 70-something to 14 or something.
Of course.
Ridiculous. And it was probably, like, a bunch of, like, eighth graders playing for the U.S. side. So,
of course.
clearly amateurs. But anyways, yeah, unfortunate. But, you know, he talks about things with drafts and stuff too. And I have a couple other friends that are, you know, on my case. But we see a lot of other people around. I see, like, a lot of it too that are, like, the Browns side, Ravens side, Bengals side, and then your own fan base. So you got the whole AFC North dogpiling on as to whether or not the Steelers – actually improved anywhere on the in this draft. And obviously we have to talk about the offense. I know some people are going to say blah blah blah, defense, whatever. I'll pull that out real quick. I don't know if you saw my tweets the other day. I'm going to unearth them just so I can grab the stats that I actually looked up. One of these things was the Freiermuth pick too, about whether or not people took him too early or why did they take him in the second round, this and that. Charlie Casserly, who's on NFL Network, former GM of the Washington Redskins, had him going 25th, had him in the first round, one pick after the Steelers to the Jacksonville Jaguars when he did that mock draft, where Justin Fields somehow was there for pick 24 as well. So that just tells you about, you know, mock drafts in general. But some people probably thought I was a little facetious when I talk about – I was actually comparing to some Browns fans were getting on my nerves about Alex Highsmith replacing Bud Dupree. A lot of the mock drafts – we were making fun of mock drafts, myself and Brian, on the last episode. And there were people who were just, like, insane, like Mel Kiper, giving them the worst grade because Tevin Jenkins was his – first round mocked pick to the Steelers, and since they didn't go tackle until the fourth round, immediately, you know, it's dog crap. And that's kind of where we're going with this angle, is if they did enough. But there are other people where I invalidated the drafts immediately when they're picking edge rusher. Well, they lost Bud Dupree. Yeah, that's true, but pay attention to the rest of the team. They drafted Alex Highsmith last year.
And third he got round
third,
last year.
Third round last year.
Yeah.
And he got to play, let me see. How many games did he have? Well, I was comparing him actually to Jadeveon Clowney, okay, because everyone's like, look at the Browns' defense now. And they listed three defensive ends and three corners and only 10 players. It wasn't even the full starting 11. And I'm not going to get on a rant about them, but it was more or less the people that are super hyper about Clowney and then given the Steelers bad mock draft grades because they have replacements in Alex Highsmith for Bud Dupree and Cam Sutton for Steven Nelson. So they've already got guys there. And in comparing this, just with Clowney had 8 starts last year. He ended up on injured reserve. We know he didn't get a sack. Highsmith had 2. Highsmith had 33 combined tackles to Clowney's 19. And I took Highsmith's final 8 games against Clowney's 8 total, by the way. Highsmith, 3 tackles for loss to Clowney's 4, the 2 sacks to 0, 5 quarterback hits to 6. And the reason I took the final 8, and it's not even fair to do completely the final 8, and I'll tell you why. Clowney faces double teams, this and that. Bud Dupree went on injured reserve after the 3rd game that of those 8 that Highsmith played. So he was only a starter for 5 of those, right? And he played Dupree was in 137 snaps to Highsmith's 44 in those first 3 games. So Highsmith had 343 snaps in those 8 games. 343 to 426 for Clowney. So Clowney, you know, 80 snaps more over an entire game. That's like practically 5 or 6 quarters worth of football there, depending on game script and scenarios and what ends up happening. And you could see the statistics. Highsmith doesn't look too bad if you're doing it by numbers. And some people are going to say, oh, well, it can't be numbers, this and that. Clowney's kind of been a little bit of a disappointment. You got a guy who came in, wasn't expecting to play behind a stud like Dupree, who was playing on a franchise tag, paying him over $16 million. Then you got Cam Sutton, and this surprised me. I was banging the drum for Sutton. I think you may have too, because I know you weren't all about Juju coming back. It wasn't that you didn't want him back, but you just thought they wouldn't sign him because of cap reasons, which was more than fair. So Steven Nelson... compared to Cam Sutton, I didn't even realize this. This is just, I started running stats. Yeah, Cam Sutton had 8 pass deflections. Nelson had 9. Sutton had 3 forced fumbles. Of course, there weren't any for Nelson. And he had 1 pick, and he played 14 games. Nelson played 15 and had the 2 picks. Nelson plays 907 snaps, and Sutton only played 548. which was 53%. And mind you, Sutton was in different positions on the field. He wasn't always on the outside. He didn't have starts. But that's just mind-boggling to me. You could see the potential where you have 548 to 907. You have a guy that's got more or just one fewer pass deflection, and he's creating turnovers. He's creating splash plays. That's where the promise or the upside comes with somebody like Sutton. So anybody that was going defensive side of the ball, I felt that were giving the Steelers bad draft grades, just weren't paying attention. So then you get over to the offensive side of the ball, and I guess since I'm already long-winded, we'll start right at the top. Did the Steelers like screw the pooch here with the Mel Kiper thinking of that they had to go offensive line early, or I already know where we're kind of going. I kind of know your thoughts, but we're going to get them out here for everyone to hear. If they go running back again, let's say they go heavier on the offensive line, they go tackle center. We talked about this on the roundtable, and then go running back. They go Trey Sermon, Kenneth Gainwell, who didn't even go until, like, what, the fifth round or something? Michael Carter, fourth round. Sermon was end of third rounder. Comp pick, I believe, maybe to the Bengals, or not the Bengals, the Broncos. He was somewhere in there.
49ers.
I'm sorry, not the Broncos. 49ers. You're right.
Javonte Williams was the Broncos.
Javonte Williams was to the Broncos, which
at
was
35.
The other name. And yeah, he went earlier. I'm sorry. I got those two confused, but. Absolutely. So you have to improve the run game. You have to improve the offense. If you pass on Najee, are you doing that by taking somebody like Trey Sermon, or if you end up with Javonte Williams or anything like that? And I kind of have to argue to the side of maybe you're not with the way we saw how this draft played out.
Yeah, I think something that I think even the big time people like Mel Kiper and, you know, all these guys that are for ESPN, NFL Network, CBS, Fox, whatever, the one thing that they just do, and all they do is seemingly just look at their board. And obviously, I'm not going to sit here and you know, run around and BS you. Like, Tevin Jenkins should have been a higher-rated prospect. Creed Humphrey was a higher-rated prospect, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we have the ability of hindsight now, and it's very clear that what the Steelers were doing here. And it's very clear that they went in with a very specific type of lineman and running back in mind. Could they have gone in and taken Tevin Jenkins and Creed Humphrey and Trey Sermon in that order? Yes, they could have. And I've seen that tweet thrown around numerous times. The only lineman, I think, of those first rounders that went, or there's two of them, that the Steelers, neither of which the Steelers had an opportunity of getting unless they traded up. The only two guys that would have really made sense for them would have been Rashawn Slater, who we saw go to the Chargers very early, number two tackle off the board, as he should have been, and Christian Darrisaw, who obviously went one pick before the Steelers. Those two are the only two players who I think truly fit what the Steelers were trying to do in terms of very obviously adapting a very flow-heavy zone scheme run game that we haven't seen them do nearly as much as they've done in the past, and that's very typical for Matt Canada. Having seen what they got out of Kendrick Green and what they saw out of Dan Moore, two of the more very zone-centric players in this draft when it comes to offensive linemen, that makes sense. Najee Harris, you know, no disrespect to the other top guys, he is so acclimated to his zone run game. You know, Alabama runs so much outside zone. He has a very good feel for it. He has a very good ability to hit inside and just be able to read and feel creases and bend things back, you know, and read moving A gaps and moving B gaps. He's just very good at it. Better, in my opinion, for what the Steelers are doing. And, you know, Neil Kulong and I have had this conversation numerous times, you know, away from all this, you know, fit matters more almost sometimes than the talent does. And I'm not sitting here, this is not a conversation of, you know, the fact that Najee Harris, I had ranked as my third best running back. I had Etienne and Williams over him. In terms of what the Steelers are trying to do, Najee Harris is the best fit for the Steelers compared to those other two, because Etienne is still kind of just like that scat back, do whatever type of deal. You know, Javonte Williams is really a downhill power runner. If the Steelers were running their old scheme, he'd probably be the dude. And then even Trey Sermon, who I think really is the light version of Javonte Williams and Najee Harris, I don't think he's nearly as good of a running back. And you can make the argument of value all you want to. I don't think he's nearly the same type of running back. And I'm not going to trust the exposure he had at Ohio State over getting a guy like Najee Harris fall in your lap at 24. So I think you look at what they were able to accomplish with getting guys like Kendrick Green, getting guys like Dan Moore, getting guys like Pat Freiermuth, getting guys like Najee Harris. It was very clear that they were going to establish a certain type of offensive identity with these bodies. Chukwuma Okorafor is a very good zone-blocking lineman as compared to what he did in terms of being a power-heavy downhill blocker. Zach Banner has yet to be seen. I don't know how he's going to look in a zone-blocking scheme. We know David DeCastro can do it, and Kevin Dotson did surprisingly well when given the opportunity when they would kind of implement some of the zone-blocking schemes for him, and he kind of saw him do it a little bit at times whenever he was at Louisiana Lafayette. You know, so I really think that you give these guys the opportunity to kind of mesh together and get this identity going. I don't care that Tevin Jenkins is probably, was a higher rated offensive lineman than Kendrick Green or whoever. My biggest knock on Creed Humphrey was his athletic limitations. And even though I wanted him because I thought he was the more talented player. I didn't know they were going to go this much bought into a whole zone running scheme. Once I saw that's the direction they were going, I'm not sure I wanted Creed Humphrey at that point because his athletic limitations are going to prevent you from really having the ability to do that. He's going to really be really good in a phone booth, be very good at blocking back on a backside A gap or blocking back to a backside three, double teaming up with a playside guard on power or whatever. You know, those are the plays where Creed Humphrey is going to be really good at. I don't see that being a fit for what the Steelers are probably going to inevitably end up doing. You're going to want to have guys like Kendrick Green who are going to be able to fish out and get outside of a one tech or a two eye or a two because he's so quick and athletic and has great length. Dan Moore, that's the one thing that I think the Steelers loved about Dan Moore compared to the other tackles in this class is he had the length. You know, everyone's criticizing guys like Tevin Jenkins for his lack of length, saying this guy's going to play guard. Or do you want to improve your guard position right now? Or do you want to play tackle? Steelers are very clearly looking to upgrade the tackle position because I really think they have concerns about whether or not Chukwuma Okorafor is going to be in their long-term plans. Don't take a tackle with short arms, especially when you're running a zone scheme offense and he's trying to hook a five technique that's aligned a little bit too wide for him and he's on the play side. You don't want to short arm Tevin Jenkins to do that. You're setting him up for failure and then forcing him to play guard, which right now in the current season, the Steelers don't need a guard. You know, say what you want to about Dawes or DeCastro. Those are your starting guards this year, barring some unforeseen circumstance like you throwing around with B.J. Finney being a starting guard.
Plenty of depth there, too.
Exactly. So, like, Tevin Jenkins, yeah, he's probably better, but he's not going to start there. So, when you look at the full picture, we know what the Steelers are trying to do. In my mind, there's really no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They wanted to go zone heavy. Kendrick Green, Najee Harris, and Dan Moore provide that. And it wouldn't surprise me that if we see some success with it, they go back to the well next year, continue to go and look for more offensive line help, knowing that DeCastro's future is up in the air, not knowing how potentially Zach Banner is going to adapt to this whole zone scheme. I'm hoping he adapts well. I'm not saying he won't, but we haven't seen it. You know, so like it wouldn't be surprising if they dip back in the well and go for that same type of profile player, you know, and then it's not going to surprise me when inevitably that means that, you know, Benny Snell kind of becomes a non-factor because we've talked about his inability to kind of read those moving gaps on zone plays. There are so many opportunities he's missed in recent seasons. And that's the one thing that I think that people get lost with a guy like Najee Harris. And they're sitting there saying, well, he had the best offensive line in Alabama. And this will be the last thing I say before I get off my soapbox. You know,
no, this is all good because I got a lot to add to this.
I got you. Yeah, so he had the best offensive line at Alabama, and the Steelers' offensive line is the worst in the league, blah, 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 whatever these people want to say. You look at so much of what he did. He made stuff out of nothing because Alabama's offensive line, yeah, they were the best in college football last year. They weren't perfect. They were missing blocks, and there was some very good SEC-caliber defenses they played where Najee Harris had to just be able to see it. And you see his vision and his ability to read and react. That's something that really not many other players in this draft had. Javonte Williams was very close, which is why he's my number two. And really, if you look at my big board, I had the three of them within a four-spot range in the 20s. I think all three of them are phenomenal running backs. He has an ability just to see that stuff, and he just does so much once he gets past the line of scrimmage. That's just him. The Alabama's offensive line is not the reason he's running through five Michigan defenders or six Notre Dame defenders on the second and third level. That's Najee Harris, you know. So you get that clearly that skill set to really get a feel for zone. So much of this, like I said, the summation of what I'm trying to say is fit has so much more to do with it. In these big times, like Mel Kiper could say they failed because Tevin Jones and Creed Humphrey and Quinn Miners, blah, blah, blah. They got the guys that fit what they're trying to do, and that's going to make them a better team when it's all said and done than just being a paper, you know, hindsight 2020 guy saying, oh, well, they could have gotten this guy, this guy, this guy, knowing what we know now. I don't care. They got the scheme fit. They got the guys that fit what they're trying to do. And whether or not you agree or disagree with it, the Steelers very clearly went in with a mindset, and I give them a lot of credit. They stuck to what they were trying to. They very clearly had an identity of tough, gritty, athletic dudes. They're going to fit their zone scheme offense. And on the defensive side, they got alphas and leaders. And so many of these dudes were captains. You know, they do stuff in the community. Like, they got a very good on the field and off the field class just on paper. And, you know, I think that's going to play out very well from this, especially when you're trying to look towards the future of life without Ben, life without some of these other guys if they end up playing their way out of Pittsburgh. You're going to need classes like this that hopefully you get a handful of guys that contribute, some very good players out of the likes of Harris, Green, Moore, Freiermuth. Like, if those four guys can become staples of your offense for the next 5 to 7, 8, 9 years, you won this draft as far as I'm concerned, regardless of what the defensive guys did. The defensive guys were all depth there. You know, I think those four are going to be how much this class can be looked at as a success. And I really think that because they went with a very clear identity to give Matt Canada help with what he wants to do as the offensive coordinator, you can't give it a failing grade, in my opinion. But that's just me.
Well, they don't give it a failing grade. They just gave it the worst grade, like a C minus or whatever. And there were others because, as you know, in your hate. It's not even a love hate, I think, relationship with draft Twitter.
Yeah,
everyone wants to sound like they're right. I mean, a lot of this is just entertainment. It's for fun, and people take it way too serious. Ha! I got this right. See, this guy did suck. And it's like they take joy in that, and I'm like, I want to see everyone succeed. And there isn't a single team in the NFL. Did you see the Detroit Lions when they got Penei Sewell?
Oh, yeah.
Did you see their draft room?
Yeah.
I was almost like rolling my eyes at it because the guy started pounding on the desk. He was like, yeah. And he's like pounding on the desk because they got their guy and they're so excited. I'm like, well, I mean, I get excited like that, but you see guys in the front office. I'm like, okay, you can take that seriously because, you know, that's what you get paid to do. But, you know, I guess Mel Kiper in a way gets paid, but he's entertainment. It's entertainment. The mock draft thing is all entertainment because unless you have the Gray's Sports Almanac from, well, now I don't know, that was 2015 in the movie Back to the Future 2, so I don't think it would have covered where we're at now. Where we're going, we don't need no roads, okay? But you know what I'm saying, unless you got a time machine or a DeLorean or whatever, you don't know what anybody's going to do. It's the same thing like people that are complaining about drafting a punter, the only punter that went in the entire draft. Well, maybe he could play a line because they're mad he didn't get a lineman. You're going to be lucky if 7th-round picks, even 4th-round picks, when you're getting down to it, there's no guarantees that any of these players, even 1st-round picks, end up panning out. We look back at previous drafts, and there's people that still wanted a quarterback, and it's just, okay, I'm not getting on the quarterback drivel today. Not going to do it, but if you aren't paying attention to having a franchise great who still, with guys who dropped passes and had the worst run game in the NFL last year and still put up 3,800 yards, 38 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Everyone thought he was going to have a noodle arm. This is after not playing for almost a year and having elbow surgery and then still putting 500 on Cleveland in that playoff game, even though I know he threw 4 touchdowns and 4 interceptions there. A very bad first quarter for the Steelers in that game. And you got to see that. You got to see the week before where Mason Rudolph was the first guy since the Tommy gun to throw 300 in a game for the Steelers, not named Ben Roethlisberger. And he has, however many games, 6, 8 games starting experience, maybe 10, I don't know, something like that. But he has experience playing in the NFL now. That's very valuable for a backup. Dwayne Haskins has experience as a former first-round pick. Why on earth would they forego that? You're going to go tackle and you're going to go quarterback. You're not fixing anything. At least I think that the 3 or even 4 picks deep, you're going to have at least contributors at this point. A lot of the other guys are looking at special teams, depth role, all the other 4 were the defensive picks, and then the punter. The punter could win the job in camp. And if he's flipping the field, that's going to be a huge, huge help for the offense and the defense here.
Guy's got a leg.
Oh, man. He could boom, man. Yeah. And maybe he takes someone's head off. The old Sebastian Janikowski type deal. You know what I mean? Another load that's there. But you got – and no, I'm not going to disparage your other employment here with Pro Football Focus, but one of the Pro Football Focus guys didn't like Dan Moore. He was only in the high 200s on his board, so he went earlier than thought. You don't know the science to any of this. You don't know where other teams have anybody listed. It's still going back to the Terrell Edmonds argument, which, by the way, Kevin Colbert on, what, 93.7 The Fan interview had said it's not performance-based, it's salary cap-based is the reason why they didn't do the fifth-year option on that. I'm like, again, I've been watching a lot of The Simpsons, me and the kid, so we're trying to go through all, like, 80 bajillion episodes that there are and Nelson but yep. it's Edmonds. Okay, he goes 28, but if he doesn't go 28 and he could be had in the second round, what? There's the same argument
36.
We were like, 36 or 40, like we were talking about Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, and Javonte Williams all gone in the top 40. It's the reason why we were talking about this. If you don't take Harris, okay, maybe you get a tackle, but you have two tackles right now, maybe not super long term, but you got two guys that were 1A 1B last year in the competition, and you end up what do you do with the rookie now you have an extra tackle and you still don't have a running back? You end up back in the Connor or Benny Snell type deal where maybe the guy isn't as strong in pass protection, maybe they don't get to the second level, maybe they're not a great pass catching back out of the backfield, maybe they can't create space. Instead is what you're talking about with the zone system, the zone scheme. Matt Canada here coming in, that's the other big part of it. Me and you talk about this all the time. They do enough with the offense. First and foremost, play calling and scheme is being changed. That is going to be a world of difference to Randy Fichtner over the last two seasons, 2019 and 2020, where it's dink and dunk football. They abandoned a run game. Run game was capable in the first 6 weeks of the season, and they totally abandoned it. You had 100-yard rushers, I think, through the first six. If not, I think Tennessee was at the sixth game, or maybe Baltimore. One of these, they were in the 90s, okay? Maybe seven games. And then you go back and look at it, and then they run 13 times for 14 yards or something like that toward the losing streak because they totally just crapped the bed on this. I don't know why. Was it because they just couldn't do it? You know what? Yes, I do want to go there before I go back to a lot of the young bucks here. Let's talk about Alejandro Villanueva for a second. $14 million, eight guaranteed over 2 years to the Baltimore Ravens. And then he starts talking about how Kevin Zeitler, 31-year-old Kevin Zeitler, who's on his fourth or fifth squad now, who's never made a Pro Bowl in his life, is going to be an upgrade over David DeCastro. I guess it was maybe a little tongue-in-cheek type things. Everybody, of course, is going to take these sound bites and they're making their clickbait and they're blowing up the story bigger than maybe what it is. But he said a few things about TikTok and wide receivers, and it's like, I couldn't even tell you who the Ravens wide receivers are right now. So obviously they're not being followed on TikTok. Maybe they have it. We wouldn't know. They have 13 followers or whatever.
Something like that.
Yeah, Hollywood Brown. Okay, Hollywood. Oh, that's not a fancy nickname whatsoever. Hollywood. It's like Hollywood Hulk Hogan. It's like trying to live in the spotlight, brother. You know what I mean? those comments got to me because he was a revolving door last year. He's obviously regressed. All of a sudden, the Ravens fans are thinking he's going to go in there at least at first for what? Orlando Brown, who they traded away? And I guess, Ronnie Stanley will come back, and I guess you'll figure out where Villanueva fits into all of this. Maybe as a road paver in their system where they don't throw the ball and they just run. Maybe that might be his strength. Maybe it'll work out for him. Good for him to make some money and get another contract or whatever, but to just kind of run your mouth and do that, and then the Ravens fans thinking, oh, well, automatically they're all over the Steelers, you didn't really improve your offensive line. Do you really think that's an improvement for your offensive line, trading away one of your guys? I understand you probably weren't going to re-sign him, but you didn't really draft anyone that's going in his spot, and then you're going with Villanueva, the guy that you're talking about, the Steelers having a bad run game last year. Three of their offensive linemen are adios. They're out of here. Matt Filer, Marquise Pouncey, the other two. Filer goes to the Chargers, got a ridiculous contract, and then Pouncey retires. So I understand there's changeover and there's the unknown, but there is the known. We know licking his chops is TJ Watt, who might be lining up. Villanueva says it part of the motivation was playing the Steelers two times a year, right? I don't know if that's the proper motivation. So, you know, when you look at maybe Zach Banner, a little bit of the unknown there. You look at Chukwuma Okorafor. Are you improving on what you had last year in that spot, or even the previous year where you had Matt Filer playing as the right tackle? I don't think it could get much worse. And if your scheme's going to change, and you talk about play calling and changing your play calling, you're talking about Villanueva maybe being better because he's with the Ravens because they run the ball more. Well, the Steelers are going to run the ball more now too. So I think that these other guys improve by default.
Yeah, I the whole Villanueva thing, that's not my money.
It's silly.
So good, yeah. good for them, good for him. Like, I'm never going to bash a player. You know, I'll bash the team. I'm not going to bash the player. Good for him for, you know, maximizing his value and really getting money, guaranteed money at that, that the Steelers really were never willing to truly give him.
Nor could they.
No.
If they wanted to.
I'm not going to sit here and, you know, be an Alejandro Villanueva truther. I think the right move for the team was to move on from him because he very clearly was regressing, and, you know, different scheme for him. Maybe it improves him. You know, I do think Chukwuma Okorafor is going to probably see a better potential season. I'm not going to sit here and pound my fist on the table saying, yeah, he's going to be a dude, but I think the scheme change will help him, and maybe it'll help Villanueva. Maybe Villanueva plays up to it. I mean, the Ravens have been relatively savvy over the years in terms of making smart decisions, and clearly they saw, you know, something in Villanueva, and they've gotten more than enough look at him over the last couple of years to know what they were getting. And, you know, in my mind, they see a dude and they clearly felt comfortable based on what they saw playing him twice last year to go and sign him. I think they're downgrading their offensive line. I don't think in any realm of possibility is Villanueva as good or better than Orlando Brown. You know, Ronnie Stanley is that offensive line. He's, you know, before his injury last year, is and will continue to be one of the best left tackles in the NFL, in my opinion. They addressed their offensive line not the way I thought they would have. You know, I think they needed just as much help on their offensive line as other teams do, including the Steelers. And I think you look at it, if anything, McDermott, they need it more because their run game, you know, their Greg Roman run game is all about big, powerful bodies up front. Getting Kevin Zeitler will help that. You know, maybe Villanueva does better on the right side. He can kind of get away with some more things on that side. But they've been issued in the past, and I don't see how you can sit there and say the Steelers didn't have the same issues on their offensive line when you look at the bodies that the Ravens were dealing with, and they had a glaring hole at right tackle instead of drafting someone with one of their first two first-round picks or someone early on day two or day three. You know, they went with Villanueva, and I think they could have gone other directions there. But again, they clearly felt comfortable waiting to give Villanueva this type of contract as opposed to giving a first-round pick or second-round pick the type of work. You know, the only pick I really liked on their offensive line was the Ben Cleveland pick. I like Ben Cleveland. I think he's going to be a good player for them. He kind of fits the mold of what they were going for. But again, scheme fit is everything. I think it's the same thing with here, with the Ravens. Maybe Villanueva does better with the Ravens because he can be more of a run blocker. He won't be exposed nearly as much as a pass protector. He'll be on Lamar Jackson's, you know, strong side. And he has the benefit of having Lamar Jackson as his quarterback, where he doesn't have Ben standing back there. No one is going to confuse Ben Roethlisberger and Lamar Jackson in terms of athleticism. So maybe that all goes a long way in helping Villanueva get back to form, or at least make him seem like he's a better lineman than he was last year because he has a more athletic quarterback and a very run-heavy offense. Maybe that makes him better. And then maybe Chukwuma Okorafor is better at left tackle for the Steelers because he's more fit, he's more athletic. Maybe he's a better fit with his length and size for his zone scheme offense, and he plays himself into a nice contract with the Steelers in the same realm that we saw with Villanueva. And all of a sudden, now you're looking at a situation where, hey, we got our left tackle. Maybe Zach Banner doesn't adapt as much as you do, but you're like, hey, we got Dan Moore. We like what we're seeing with him. All of a sudden, boom, you have two left tackles. You don't know how these things are going to play out because this Ravens have their scheme, and they're pretty firm in their scheme, and they're hoping Lamar Jackson takes the stride forward at being a better armed quarterback, but they have an identity. The Steelers are trying to recreate that identity, And you're going to see what happens with that. And if the Steelers can get an identity that fits this Matt Canada offense, we can't count Chukwuma Okorafor or Zach Banner out until we've seen them do it. And it's very clear what they're going for, both teams.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I was going for. It wasn't necessarily taking shots at the Ravens, but it was somebody that's like neglecting the fact that the Steelers won 11 straight games last year and their division and took care of business with the Ravens when it counted as well. You have Ronnie Stanley got hurt in November. I don't know if that's a full year recovery type thing. Is he even making it to camp or week one?
I haven't heard a lot about it, so I'm not sure.
I mean, I haven't either. You've got Kevin Zeitler, who I was already talking about, one of your guards. You have Marshall Yanda, who retired. Matt Skura, who got benched, was their center. They've had center problems for a few years, and they're counting on moving Bradley Bozeman over from the guard position and Ben Cleveland, who is a third round pick. We're talking about addressing needs, right? They didn't go after a center. They went after a guard in the third round. Now, mind you, look what this team did when they added J.K. Dobbins as well. Nick Boyle and Mark Andrews at your tight end spots. I understand it's a different run scheme than what we're looking at with the zone run scheme with the Steelers under Matt Canada's offense. Potentially what we're thinking here with the fits, but I don't see where there's much of a difference here in the identities of these teams. The Browns themselves have an identity. I can't say that the Bengals have anything right now. I can't talk about that, and I don't want to go into the whole AFC North, but I'm just trying to say when you've got all these other fan bases that are crapping all over you and saying that you didn't fix anything with the offensive line, you had a lot of you've had some turnover. You still got BJ Finney, maybe Rashawn Coward, who started with the Chicago Bears last year. And I'm assuming he played probably more a guard or a center, just like Finney. But I think he could play all over the line, and that's the reason they brought him in, was because of his versatility. So you've got some other names to toss into the hat here, along with Dan. Go ahead, Dan Moore.
So you also have Adrian Clem. That might be the biggest name out of all of them when it's all said and done.
Another change. The offensive line coach, a young stud, coaches. We've mentioned this. So when you're changing your play calling and you may have some actual identity with the run game, do you want the J.K. Dobbins type, Cadillac type pick, or do you want the Geo Metro or whatever? You might get something out of Trey Sermon, or you might not with these middle round picks. So Najee is the complete package. A lot of people are already saying Le'Veon Bell, this and that. Perhaps better, perhaps worse. I don't want to compare him to Bell. Had a completely different style. He had that patient Marcus Allen type of run style. So, you're never going to have the same player. He's not going to be another Jerome Bettis. Najee Harris is going to be Najee Harris, but Najee Harris is clearly one of the top backs in the entire draft. You bring in a Pat Freiermuth. You pair him with Eric Ebron. You have the same look of a Mark Andrews, Nick Boyle type of pair when both of those guys are on the field with the Ravens. So I fail to see how anyone could speak from their moral high ground here when you're adding these components. You're moving around with the offensive line. You still have Ben Roethlisberger, who does not have the noodle arm. Somebody's going to come on and in the comments, well, he didn't throw a lot downfield. Didn't have a whole lot of time to. You're hoping that kind of changes. You also kind of think that Randy Fickner's style was throw this stuff short. You also had guys who didn't grab the ball, so you hope that gets fixed with, like, Diontae Johnson. But if it doesn't, you still have Juju back. You still have Chase Claypool, who everyone was very enamored with their second-round pick last year. They didn't have a first-round pick. You still have James Washington entering a contract year but can make combat catches. Ray McLeod is a guy that you send down the field. You got to respect his speed. And you add all these other guys into the mix, that looks pretty formidable to me. I think that helps the offensive line, and it helps the new coaching staff, regardless of maybe – I don't think it's a one-year – I don't want to call it a fix, but I don't think it's a one-year process either when you're thinking about this. They're going to still get some offensive linemen next year. And as these guys mature and you find out who pans out as picks with at least the first three, if not first four, having an opportunity to maybe be that guy – okay, the Steelers have been doing it with undrafted guys. Villanueva, they changed positions. They grabbed him from being a defensive end, right, with the Eagles in their camp. Saw him across the field, brought him in, converted him to a tackle, and then he had an opportunity because Kelvin Beachum got hurt. Kelvin Beachum himself was a seventh-round pick. Ramon Foster was an undrafted guy. The other guys had some pedigree. Pouncey, Marcus Gilbert, David DeCastro, but they weren't all taken in the same year. 2010, 2011, 2012, two first rounders and a second round pick, as was the case for Marcus Gilbert. So you're still going to have some things that are going to be working out, but the Steelers still made Super Bowls before that. What were some of the names that we had brought? Oh, man, I'm trying to think of the one that I completely forgot about. But there was Max Starks, for example.
Justin Hartwig.
I mean, come on. I mean, they were able and capable of doing that. Willie Parker, an undrafted
Sean Mahon.
Well, he wasn't all that in a bag of chips either.
That's my point.
Yeah, I was trying. Oh my goodness, I cannot think. There was one that really came out. It was like a one year kind of wonder. And now I'm going to have to look at these.
When they kicked the tires on Flozell Adams, that was a nice little.
Well, they did that too because they were still trying. They were trying to keep Ben upright, and what it ended up being was it was the play calling of Bruce Arians that got him sacked more times in those 5 years since the nine that have proceeded, that have been since. There's now like a gap of maybe seven sacks or something like that. He's almost caught up to the Bruce Arians era within like almost twice as much time. But Ben is one of the fewest or least sacked quarterbacks in the league, so you don't have to think, oh, they needed Trey Lance, oh, they needed Justin Fields, oh, they need the next mobile quarterback coming out of college. Ben was just going to sit there and he's just going to take hits. Since when? He took a shot last year. Maybe his knee was bothering him. Maybe that had another thing to do with it. This team had scheduling problems with COVID where they didn't get a break. They didn't get rest, and other guys got hurt. You know, this stuff happens. It happened to Zach Banner, too, so you hope he comes back from an injury, too. I mean, it's something you got to throw out there. But I don't think it's all doom and gloom. Colbert also threw out they may be looking at – there may be still some free agents. Maybe they could see who they could fit. I don't know where they're looking. Offensive line still, defensive depth, I don't know. But as far as the offense, I think they did more than enough because if they don't take a tight end there, let's say you go after somebody like Trey McKitty later on. Where did he go? Round four, round five, something like that. Late round four. You know, who's to know if he can block or whatever. They've been getting guys like Zach Gentry who he's not cracking the lineup. Jesse James got in there by default because – everyone else was getting hurt. He came in at the tail end of the last year of Heath Miller and Matt Spaeth. He gets in there. They tried to put Ladarius Green in. It didn't work. Vance McDonald got dinged up a little bit there too. Jesse was not a solid blocker. Jesse would go down. He was like a baby giraffe running around in the field. Didn't have a whole lot of yards after the catch. Solid hands. He still caught it, but he's not somebody I was bringing back. I would rather have Freiermuth. You know who Jesse is. Freiermuth has at least that floor and a higher ceiling. And almost one of the top tight ends in the entire draft. So this is somebody that could seal the edge. He could help you in the second level in the run game and these schemes that we're talking about. So if the offensive line doesn't necessarily work there. And then the other piece here, Derek Watt was hurt how often last year? I know he's only going to get like five snaps a game, maybe tops. But we're talking about goal line and short yardage situations where they toss Benny Snell in there for whatever reason. You're talking about a running back in Harris who can break tackles, move the chains, and get those extra yards. That's something that's been missing. You have Derek Watt in there now. They haven't had a fullback the last 2 years either. Rosie Nix missed most of 2019. So there's another component to this that we haven't even really discussed or mentioned in a while. Why are you wasting all this money on Derek Watt? It's special teams. But he will get his shot in there here or there. And when you put him out there with all of these names that I mentioned, I feel a lot more confident about the Steelers' offense. It's not that I didn't feel confident last year. We didn't know that this is the way this was going to unravel. So now that you have these changes, I feel pretty good about it. I don't feel like, oh my God, they didn't do anything and they took a fat punter. Screw this team. Yeah. Screw the team. No. Go be a fan of somebody else. Jeez, oh, no. Man.
I agree. I thought they did. Like I said, I thought the offensive identity here, I thought this helped now and in the future. I mean, if Najee Harris is your starting running back for 5, 6, 7 years or whatever, however long, he was worth it. And if he's, especially if he's good, which he should be, I think he's one of the safer picks of running back if there ever was such a thing. Pat Freiermuth, this, like we've seen, I'm not going to assume that know this, but we've seen in the past that Matt Canada has done 12 personnel sets. You got to have two tight ends. And I'm sorry if they're going to go 12 personnel heavy. I don't want to see Zach Gentry out there with the Eric Ebron. And no knock on Kevin Rader, that Kevin Rader really is not going to give you a whole lot of deceptiveness as a receiver. He's really just a stud blocker. I do think he's a chance of still making the roster as an extra guy. I like him more than Gentry at this point. But you're looking at Ebron. Who knows if Ebron stays in Pittsburgh beyond this year? He's getting in that age. He's had the drop issues, and he's expensive. Pat Freiermuth is probably going to be your tight end of the future. If he's your tight end of the now and the next 10 years, it's worth it. If Kendrick Green comes in and wins the starting job as a rookie this year and ends up being your starting center for 10 years, it's helping now and in the future. Dan Moore probably won't start this year. I know Adrian Clem, and they said that he was going to have a chance to compete. He will get a chance to compete because I know they think highly of him. Even if he doesn't win the job now, let's say he's a starter in 2 years and he goes on to start for 7 years, it was worth it. Like, you're looking to build for the now and build for the future. And then don't even get me started on those defensive picks. Who's to say that Buddy Johnson's not the starting middle linebacker next to Devin Bush in 2022? We have no idea. Who's to say that, you know, TJ Watt says, screw you, signs a deal elsewhere, and all of a sudden you don't have TJ Watt? I don't think that happens because the Steelers are going to give him basically a blank check. But, you know, he's not signed yet. He very well could be. You know, Quincy Roche, I actually looked real quick. I had him as my 137th player in this draft. They picked him at 216, just to get an idea of where I thought he would go and where he went. Pat Freiermuth was my 38th overall prospect, took him at 55. Yeah. Shakur Brown was 189, went undrafted. Like, the Steelers got – my board means nothing, but I'm not the only person that felt this way about these guys either. You know, so there's guys at every level of this draft on both sides of the ball that are going to help now and down the road, I think. I'm not – obviously not all nine of these guys are going to be dudes. If they did, you're looking at 1974 all over again. It's just unlikely. You know,
where
but
they didn't draft the punter. You didn't. I don't exactly know if you listened to the last show. You probably were traveling. But there was a bit in the Asked and Answered from Bob Labriola from an old, I think, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette article on that 74 draft. And second rounder was Jack Lambert. And, you know, he's from Kent State. And they said, well, why? They probably didn't need that. The only guy that was worth anything or worth his weight was Lynn Swann. And they didn't take a punter in those top five picks.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
But, so I think that's
dealing with it back then too.
And that's the one thing I think that people complain about that pick all they want to. You complain about Jordan Berry. Now you get a Ray Guy Award winner who we've seen boot punt. His biggest flaw might be the fact that he gives a little bit too much depth and hang time on his punts, which is a good problem to work with. I'd rather have to pull a guy back and control him than try to get him to kick his leg out where he can't kick it. You know, like, that's a good problem to have from a special teams perspective. Exactly. Like, I'd rather pull him back and work on his true placement when he already has the boom. You know, he's going to put it down there. If he ends up being your starting punter now, I mean, you look at teams like the Ravens, who have had one of the steadiest punting situations in the NFL now for the last 7-8 years. Why can't that be Presley Harvin the third? You know, like, give him the opportunity. If the Steelers get that now and in the future, you're making yourself better. And again, they weren't, I don't care what anyone says, they weren't a Tevin Jenkins away from contending. They weren't a Creed Humphrey away from contending. If Kendrick Green and Najee Harris do what they're supposed to do and Pat Freiermuth becomes your tight end of you know, the 12 personnel now and number one tight end down the road for the future, you won the draft. I don't care. And it's all in a vacuum because guess what? You're going to go and pick guys next year to draft needs. You're going to go and do the same thing the year after that. Like, it, you saw the Steelers offensive line transformation didn't happen in 1 year. It wasn't going to happen in 1 year because that means you're going to pick three dudes in the first three rounds and hope that all three turn into solid elite players. It's going to be a progression like it was back in 2011, 12, and or 2010, 11, and 12 when we saw, you know, Pouncey, Gilbert, and DeCastro go in the first and second round of those years. It's going to be the same thing. You're not going to see that immediate dividends, and the Steelers were more than just one player away from being a contending Super Bowl champion. I thought they did enough with those four offensive picks. First of all, we appreciate the fact we've never seen them do that, not in my lifetime at least, where they went four offensive picks in a row. I think it was the first time they'd done four on one side of the ball in how long, since the 80s or something like that?
It may have been. There were three on defense back in 2016. It was the Artie Burns draft with
had
Sean
been
Davis
offense. It had been offense Hargrave. Since the 80s, I remember. And then I think it was the first time since like the early 80s or late 70s where they went four. I mean, I'm probably wrong, but I thought it was since they'd done four on either side of the ball to start a draft. So that shows that at least they knew there was an issue that needed to be addressed on the offensive side of the ball.
Well, not only that, the last time they took offense, off the top of my head, probably, I mean, Claypool, I guess, counts as the top
technically,
pick,
it was DeCastro.
DeCastro, yeah. I mean, it was Bush, Edmonds, Watt, Burns, Dupree, Shazier, Jarvis Jones, and then it was DeCastro, Cam Hayward in the middle there, and then Marquise Pouncey. But I absolutely trust Kevin Colbert. I would trust him with a newborn baby if it was the second round pick, because you know, he's just been so good with them over the years. You know, there are very few, and as I see this, Mike Adams is here on my list because I scrolled down to DeCastro, but very seldom does he miss on those second round picks too. I mean, Jason Worlds, say what you will, he was.
He was getting ready to cash in before he decided to retire. You know, he's going to make about
Bell,
$13, $14 million a year.
Stephon Tuitt. You can't hold Senquez, Golson, and those injuries against them. Sean Davis was still serviceable. He was a starter. He was an Iron Man up until he got hurt his final year here. Juju Smith-Schuster, James Washington, Deontay Johnson was a third-round pick. Chase Claypool, second-rounder. And so now you got Pat Freiermuth in that.
Who was I think in any other year that Kyle Pitts is not – in that class, he's your consensus number one tight end. I mean,
oh yeah, absolutely.
Like Kyle Pitts is an all you know, the best tight end prospect to come out in years, whether or not you view him as a pure tight end or not. Pat Freiermuth was about the most well-rounded you could get. People want to look at Tommy Tremble. Tommy Tremble had such limited receiving ability. I'm not saying he can't do it, but you were taking a gamble that you could develop that, even though he might have been a better blocker. Pat Freiermuth, of all the guys not named Kyle Pitts, was the most overall best talent. And probably, I think, in my most boards, if you looked across the league, probably most boards had him as the number two tight end behind Pitts. Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, and I actually was saying when I was mocking Tommy Tremble, I was talking about getting the next Matt Spaeth, not the next Heath Miller.
Correct.
So everything you've said is valid here as far as did it improve? Well, it's not only your hope is it's not only improved. I think we've given enough to go beyond hope, and you're going to start becoming a believer as these guys get on the field. But it's not only for the end of the Roethlisberger era, which, by the way, he can still come back next year. It's not completely over with just yet. It doesn't mean he's handing the keys over to Mason Rudolph. That ship may sail before Ben's ready to say goodbye. And who's to say Haskins doesn't pan out there too? Everybody's so worried about the next quarterback or the backup quarterback. It's a whole other rant. We're up against it right now, Zach. So I thank you for joining me once again. But beyond that, it's whoever the next guy is. Wouldn't you like him surrounded with some talent? Chase Claypool should still be on his rookie deal, you would assume.
Claypool, Deontay Johnson.
You may have Johnson or Juju on another deal, a longer term there. You're going to have Freiermuth still and Najee Harris and whatever linemen end up working out there. It's going to be a nice little situation for the next quarterback to step into. Or, God forbid, if Ben gets hurt again, you got a better cast maybe around the support system around the guy. That was the main problem in 2019. First of all, Rudolph gets his clock cleaned, and then you don't have Juju or Connor, and then Johnson. I keep mentioning the bleeding out of his ear deal. Mm-hmm. I can't stop mentioning that. But then, man, we did that show, what was it, like a year and a half ago, where we counted – how many guys did they play on offense?
Oh, yeah. Like 41, 43? It was last offseason. It was unbelievable how many guys they ultimately played with from
Kareth White
Week 17.
And Tony Brooks James or something like that. Jones. Yeah. I'm sorry. I can't even remember his name. He had a couple of coffee.
It was a blimp.
Blip. The blimp. The blimp is going to be booting balls.
He was the complete opposite of a blimp. He was like 5'7". Complete opposite of a blimp.
I hate to make fun of his weight. I mean, he has to know he's a larger dude, and there's nothing wrong with being larger guys, right? You know what I mean? That'd be kind of a cool nickname, the blimp. You got the bus, now you got the blimp. He kicks it to the blimp. But thanks for joining me, man. It's been a fun discussion, and we went, as we tend to do, long-winded, either one of us. So, but... got to get you back because we're going to have to talk about which of these dudes. Everybody came back to dudes. Dudes was the word when I was like a 10-year-old. Now everybody's like, dude. And I kind of like it, dude.
It's very big in our office
instead
calling a guy. He's a dude. Like, it's just
bro.
Just a thing. Yeah.
Not bro. Now it's back to dude. Now there was even a show called Hey Dude on Nickelodeon. And anyways, but very cool stuff. We'll see which of these dudes might have a shot at making the 53-man roster. It may surprise you what our answers are, and we're going to hold those until next time. So,
yes, sir.
Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. don't forget this guy over here, Zach Meckler. At Coach Meckler, there's a T in there somewhere.
Meckler.
Yes, give him a follow on Twitter too while you're out there giving us ratings and reviews and saying how great we are. Which I'm patting my back here. I'm getting a little confident, but no, I love the comments. Keep them coming, even when we agree to disagree. Will it be perfect? It's never going to be perfect. It's a game of inches. It's a game, very close games. It's a lot of parity in the NFL. So that's what we're aiming for. And very seldom do we ever steer our great supporters wrong. So that's Zach. I'm Joe. Until next time, we encourage you, as each and every time we do, to be safe, be good. We'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.